Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. We want to give a shout out to any new listeners who are joining us for the very first time. We're happy to have you aboard. For those of you who have been here from the start, you already know the drill. We live and die by this team just like the rest of you, and we make no apologies for that. I am your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. You can find me on Twitter at Color of the Iris. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Joining me tonight from Reading, Pennsylvania is Micah Storms. Micah, how are you?
I'm doing good. It feels weird to be podcasting when the Red Sox are off, but no stress tonight, no stress. So relax. I could use that, especially after that Colorado series.
Yeah. The weather sort of changed things around for us with that rain delay. But you're right. It's nice to not be looking over our shoulders at any scores or anything for once. So that's good. Also joining us tonight from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how you doing?
Not too bad. Goddamn rain delayed the second show. Normally, for the listening audience, and some of you may have figured this out, we typically record this show right after the previous show where we discussed the Rockies. So, but we decided to push it back since it was such a late start for us. If the game's delayed, we're delayed. And, is what it is.
Yeah. Hopefully not too many of those in the future, but I think we'll be all right. So, yeah, this is our Bastards Roundtable episode. We're going to be talking some Red Sox, some trade deadline, and we'll quickly hit on the Oakland Athletics situation with them. Looks like they are a full go for moving to Las Vegas in the near future. So we'll touch on that a little bit later. But I wanted to start with the Red Sox, who, of course, just came off a disappointing series loss to the Colorado Rockies, especially coming off of winning 2 out of 3 in New York. You sort of expected, maybe that might have been a turning point. Maybe they'd play a little bit better against a bad team coming into Fenway Park. And it was just the opposite. Like I said, lost 2 out of 3. And if it's not for Nolan Jones making a bad error in right field, you may have been swept. So things are not great for the Red Sox right now. They're 34-35, 14.5 games out of first place in the AL East, 5 games out of the wild card. So it's starting to look a little grim because the teams that they have to leapfrog in the wild card to even be in that discussion, they'll play a bunch of them later this month. And I don't know, I think I speak for most Red Sox fans when I say that I don't feel very confident about some of those matchups. So that kind of prompted us to sort of look ahead to the August 1st trade deadline because it's going to come up before we know it. And there's already some discussions going about around the league. And we really wanted to look at for the Red Sox, it's not so much a question of are they buyers or are they sellers? I think we know what they're going to do. They went over the luxury tax last year, and it was a complete waste of time. They are under it now. And unless you're very clever, it's hard to be buyers in the trade market without going back over the luxury tax. So I think we can all safely assume the Red Sox are not going to do that. And if that comes down from ownership or whatever, I just find it highly unlikely. So I think we can all pretty much assume the Red Sox will be sellers of some kind. Now, that can vary from selling off just a few pieces, or that can go all the way to the end of the spectrum of just completely blowing it up and saying that's it, hitting the hard reset in a way. Not sure which direction they'll go, but at the end of the day, I think we can all agree there will be some selling that's going to happen. So we were kind of looking at the roster and we each sort of identified who we think is the Red Sox best trade ship going into that August 1st deadline. So, Micah, I'm going to start with you. Who do you think is the Red Sox best trade asset this year at the deadline?
I'm really hoping we don't have to go down this road. As you said, it's not looking good, but I do think after last year where Chaim Bloom really, he kind of didn't do anything. He didn't decide and he kind of just stood. And I think he's going to pick one way or another. Obviously right now it looks like sell. I do think that's what they're going to do. Now I think you have to weigh, do you want to sell for to get a little bit better, or are you kind of blowing things up even more? Because then 2024, how competitive really are you? And the name that I have, to me, not only makes this team worse in 23, but then I think it would make this team a lot worse in 24. And that's Alex Verdugo. Verdugo has been fantastic this year. 292 average with a 367 OBP. His K rate is only slightly above his walk rate, which is excellent in today's game. And his defense, if you looked at his Baseball Savant page, I mean, there are reds all over his page. Defensively, he has improved so much. So he has a lot of value. He's shown he can hit at the leadoff spot. So some teams, they have a good lineup, but they don't have that leadoff hitter, and he can hit lefties and he can hit righties. So he has a lot of desirable traits. And the thing with Verdugo is he's not a rental. He's still under team control. He has one more year of arbitration. So typically we've seen in recent years at the deadline that teams are willing to spend a little bit more, give up maybe a higher prospect, because not only are they getting the player for the final 2 months of the year, but they're also getting the player for next year. And then they have the opportunity this offseason to potentially, if they really like him, they could extend him. So the team has a lot more options. So typically those types of options allow the team that's going to trade an asset like that to get a good return. So I think he has a lot of value. I think he could bring back not just one prospect, but I think he could bring back a package of prospects. Personally, I'm really hoping this does not happen. I am definitely in the Alex Verdugo fan club, and I would be for that. I would be in favor of them extending him and keeping him as their right fielder for the future. Right field in Fenway Park is extremely challenging, and he does a really good job there. So I'm in favor of extending him. I love Verdugo, but I do think he does have a lot of value in terms of trade.
Terry, this was a guy that you picked to win MVP last season. Was it season or 2 seasons ago?
It was probably 2021, actually, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So obviously a guy that you were high on then, I think you're still pretty high on him now. What do you think of that?
I think it's absolutely plausible that he could be traded. I just woke up from a nap, full disclosure. You guys are aware of that. Audience isn't. I don't know of an outfielder of his impact that's going to be available. So he could be in high demand. And just kind of looking down through the standings right now, teams that could use an outfielder, the Baltimore Orioles probably could use one. They've got one of the top farm systems in MLB, so they do have the trade capital. It's just whether or not the Red Sox would be willing to deal within the division. You're starting to see more and more of that, so I don't think it's quite, you know, what it used to be in terms of an automatic, no. Minnesota Twins could probably use an upgrade. The Cleveland Guardians definitely could use some outfield upgrades. That's just the American League. Texas Rangers probably could, but so many teams, the Milwaukee Brewers and the Red Sox have done business with them, you know, on and off. The Arizona Diamondbacks. There's so many potential dance partners here. And if, anyone's willing to give up a good package, I can't see why. I think the Red Sox front office phone's going to be busy, you know, at least weighing offers for a guy like Verdugo.
Yeah, the difficult part for the Red Sox is they're going to get called for sure. I mean, especially if teams get a sense that they are selling, teams are going to call about Alex Verdugo. And, you know, they're going to call mostly because of his age and his contract and the year that he's having, but also because, you know, there's an issue, maybe an issue between him and the manager, right? It's, you know, got benched for not hustling and then came back, played better. The manager challenged him in the previous offseason to get in better shape. So at some point, the Red Sox are going to have to definitively say to other teams around the league, either, yes, he's available, let's talk, or no, he's untouchable. And I don't know if the Red Sox can really afford to label too many guys as untouchable, given the situation that they're in. Verdugo would definitely get you a great package back. I do agree, though, that I personally, I want him extended. I want him in Boston for at least another, you know, 4 or 5 years, something like that. I think you can get him at a pretty reasonable contract, too. I think you could probably offer him like the Benintendi deal, maybe sweeten it a little bit, and you could keep him here. And that's good value for a player like Verdugo, who I think has a higher ceiling than Benintendi at this point. But I mean, if a team like you mentioned the Orioles, Terry, I mean, trading within the division, that's not so taboo anymore, especially with the schedule, you know, sort of rebalancing now. And the Orioles do have a very deep farm system. So if they call up and they say, hey, we want Verdugo and, you know, just to throw a name out there, they say, we'll give you a package and it's headlined by Grayson Rodriguez. I mean, that's going to be really hard for the Red Sox to say no to. So they're going to get calls like that. It's going to be really difficult for them to make that decision. Ultimately, I side with Micah. I hope we don't come to that. I hope that they keep him and they extend him. But don't be surprised if you start to hear Alex Verdugo's name, you know, on Twitter and, you know, the rumor mill, especially once trading season really kicks off. So, Micah, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, the only outfielders that I can really think of would be potentially Jock Peterson, plays for the Giants. I mean, the Giants are 36 and 32, so they're kind of right in the mix, so they could be buyers rather than sellers. But Peterson's a name, and Michael Conforto maybe has some trade value as well that you could put him out there. But there's not a lot, as you stated. So I think the demand would be there for sure, because Verdugo, he's rare at this deadline.
Yeah, absolutely. He will be a hot commodity.
I didn't really weigh in on this. My preference is also to keep Verdugo and to extend him as well. Suddenly our outfield doesn't look as weak as it did, you know, coming into the season, because Yoshida has proven he basically is the player he was hyped up to be. You know, coming over from Japan, and Jaren Duran has emerged, you know, and I'm not all the way there. And he, you know, he didn't have his last few weeks haven't been stellar, you know, certainly not as robust as he was, you know, in mid to late April till, you know, mid May, but I feel like we've got a little bit more flexibility to at least entertain that now. But my preference is that he stays. Now, he's been, you know, on the wrong end of some public comments from Cora, as you mentioned, and it's hard to tell, you know, how Bloom might think of him. He was basically one of the centerpieces in the Mookie deal. So, but you know, we'll see.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, the Cora stuff, it could be that Cora is actually the right manager for Alex Verdugo, because he did challenge him in the offseason and Verdugo got in better shape. He did bench him for not hustling to kind of put a spark under him. That worked. So, and we don't know what Cora's future is. That's a little bit uncertain right now, too. So if you sign Verdugo to an extension, but you fire Alex Cora, is the new manager going to rub Verdugo the wrong way or vice versa? And, you know, so there is that to factor in as well. But I think ultimately I'm with you guys. I'd prefer to just extend him and keep him, because he is the known commodity out there. So Duran, like you said, we still don't really know if he's all the way there yet. Verdugo, I think we know what he is, and he's a very good player. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle him. Terry, what's the name that you would throw out there for trade candidates?
So I think one of our biggest trade chips could be Kenley Jansen. And Kenley, like Verdugo, not exactly a rental because he does have 1 year of control beyond this year. But, man, if he's had some blips recently, but, you know, he led all of MLB last year in saves with, 40-something. He also led MLB with blown saves as well. So, what we've seen from him, those blips, I guess, are to be expected and not necessarily a lot to be concerned about. And I think the benefits here are twofold. You free up a ton of payroll. He's making $16 million next season. So I think the Red Sox would love to shed that, and it gives them an edge as far as staying under the luxury tax next year as well. But here's the other thing too. Is he a liability? We spoke about this on, I think it was an episode of Totally Legit or Calling the Cops, and I sort of compared it to the Diekman signing. Like, because Diekman had another year and he hadn't been pitching well. And as it turned out, Heim made the right move. You know, he traded him, got out of the money, and there was no future liability there. We don't know what a 36, 37-year-old Kenley Jansen is going to look like with a history of cardiac issues. And what if these blips aren't blips? Maybe that's more of where he's trending. So you could kind of get rid of a little bit of a liability as well. And looking at last year's trade deadline, I don't know. You guys are probably more prospect savvy. There wasn't really a huge haul when it comes to returns. The Braves got Raisel Iglesias. He was the best reliever moved. And they gave up Jesus Chavez and Tucker Davidson. So I'm not sure if those are high-end guys or not. But I think Jansen could potentially be the biggest, the biggest closer available on the market. And looking through the standings, how much do you think Steve Cohen would be willing to give up to to get a closer following the Edwin Diaz thing? Now, Diaz could be back before the playoffs, and then you add Jansen to the mix. That's suddenly a pretty sexy-looking bullpen, for the Mets, if they can get it together. They won last night, so they're back within four games of 500, and they are only four games out of the wild card. So they're not out of it, and I think they're more likely to have a rebound than the Red Sox are. So that could be one front office. Another team also in the NL East, the Philadelphia Phillies, could be pretty motivated to beef up their bullpen. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in that conversation. You know, Dombrowski calling, hey, Heim, heard you're about to lose your job. What do you want for Jansen? Dombrowski's been there before. So, he'll trade anybody to get whatever he wants. Look back to the Mets. I did forget to mention MLB Pipeline has their farm system ranked number 11. That sounds really high to me. I couldn't access the Baseball America list. That's always the one I like to cross-check with. Maybe the Mets have more trade capital than I thought. And looking down, I mean, there's not quite as many dance partners as we just went over with Verdugo, but you never know. The Texas Rangers, I haven't really looked into their bullpen, but they've got a decent farm as well, and we've seen them make moves. So, but I think there's a better than 50% chance Jansen gets moved.
Micah, what do you think?
It's tough to find a more proven relief pitcher than Jansen. I mean, in the postseason, he's appeared in 59 games and he has a 2.2 ERA. So this is a guy who is battle tested. He's had a couple of series, of course, that he had a couple of tough outings, but overall, he's been as consistent as you can find in the postseason. So I could definitely see a team wanting to acquire him. It really just depends on the money. Because you have, that could be a good thing or it could be a bad thing. And some teams may like the idea that he's not a rental and that he has team control next year, because then they don't have to worry about either an eighth inning guy or a closer themselves next year. So maybe they like that. Maybe other teams don't like the idea of having to pay $16 million for a 37-year-old closer. So I think it could go both ways. Just some names that I jotted down that could be available. Daniel Bard, you never know what the Colorado Rockies are going to do, but I don't see why they would hold on to Daniel Bard. So that could be a closer that could be on the market. Alexis Diaz for the Reds, he's been a name that has been put out there, but I think it would cost a team a lot more to acquire Diaz because he's young. Aroldis Chapman is out there. He's a proven closer. He's kind of found his velo again. He's been hitting 102, 103 with the Royals. And then Pittsburgh, what are the Pittsburgh Pirates going to do? Nobody knows. I don't even think they know. But David Bednar is a really good closer, so maybe he's thrown out there. So there could be some competition in terms of closers available. But I don't know what it would take to get Jansen. I think if the Red Sox were to eat some of the money, maybe the rest of this year they would eat all the contract, and then the team that acquires him would take on next year's contract. Maybe you get a better prospect that way. I'm not sure, but tough to beat a postseason resume than Jansen's. And I think if I'm a contending team, that matters. I want someone that has been in that spot before that can keep his cool when the pressure's on. So I do think Jansen, he's a real good trade chip for the Red Sox.
With Jansen, the key is you're going to have to find a trade partner that doesn't care about the money and also needs a closer and wants to win now. He's the second highest paid closer in baseball. He's tied with Raisel Iglesias over there in Atlanta. And obviously Edwin Diaz takes the cake as number one. So second highest paid closer in baseball. And he's not exactly, he's not exactly leading the way for like closer of the year right now. He's been good. But as you mentioned, Terry, he's had some blips on the radar too. There's been a few times where he just hasn't looked great and he's blown a couple of games. So that's going to be the big issue. The contract is very high. He's an older pitcher who's had heart issues, health issues in the past. They haven't crept up yet this year, but you know, there was that game where he, was lightheaded and, there's always kind of something hanging over him with that. I think the Texas Rangers would be a perfect trade partner. If you really wanted to move Jansen, they've got Will Smith closing games for them right now. And he's not doing terrible. He's got 11 saves, ERA just over 3. But you have to imagine with the Rangers in the position they're in now, they've got to be in win now mode. And adding Jansen to the back end of that bullpen with the way their starting pitching's going could make them really nasty. And they do have a pretty good farm system. They've got some young kids that I think, I don't know if you're not going to get probably a top 5 prospect, maybe top 10 if you're willing to absorb some money, but they've got guys down there that you could absolutely snatch up and I think would be really good to supplement your farm system with. So of all the teams that need closers or would want closers, the Mets would be an interesting one, but part of me feels like they're determined to just make it work until Diaz gets back. I think that they're optimistic that he'll be back sooner rather than later. And, if they go on a second half run, they're going to rely on him. So the Phillies are definitely an interesting option. I just don't know really what they've got in terms of prospects or whatever that would really help you. So Texas to me is the team that I look at. If you wanted to trade Kenley Jansen, that I think is an ideal landing spot for him. They need a closer. They are contending. They're in first place in a very tough division. They want to win now. They don't want to let this one slip away, because they could end up being one of the best teams in baseball if they play their cards right at the deadline and they continue to trend this way, even after losing DeGrom. So I just think that's an ideal trade partner for Jansen out of all the teams we mentioned.
There are a number. I mean, I could see the Red Sox, for the right prospect, eating a portion of that contract, 4 to 8 million, let's say, if it's a real good prospect. Don't rule out a 3-team trade as well. We saw that done with Benintendi. Wasn't an overwhelming return, and it wasn't really expected to be at the same time. Micah, you mentioned the Cincinnati Reds. Unbelievably, they are 1 game under .500, 2.5 games out of the wild card, only 1.5 games out of the division. They've won 8 out of their last 10. Like, they've got a bunch of young kids up that are just thriving, and I haven't been able to go back and look, but perhaps the Red Sox series might have been the start of their turnaround. And, they just took 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers in the last week. So I could see them possibly being buyers, believe it or not. Maybe not insanely aggressively, but I feel like they're more likely to add at this point. The jury's still out on what the Pittsburgh Pirates are. They are in first place, a game ahead of Milwaukee, and Milwaukee is typically an aggressive trade deadline team. So that's an interesting race, but yeah. And hey, what, put a mega deal together, Verdugo and Jansen. Look at that, that's
well, and with the Reds, I mean, talk about a team that has the money to spend. They've got the 25th payroll in all of baseball, so they shouldn't really care too much about adding on a contract like Kenley Jansen's. If the Red Sox didn't feel like absorbing any of the money, I think they probably still should a little bit just to sweeten the pot, especially if you are going to trade with Cincinnati. They have a very deep farm system, but Cincinnati has a lot of room to add contracts like that. So if they feel like that helps get them over the edge, get another guy for the back end of that bullpen, that would be a good place to look as well, for sure.
I think where it's a short-term deal, I don't think it's that daunting. I'm trying to think of a longer-term one. Xander, you couldn't really use that example, but there are some where it's like, oof, that long-term money isn't worth the pain. But it's a relatively short-term risk with Jansen if it doesn't work.
Yeah, absolutely. So the guy that I am going to throw out there, I think this is the Red Sox best trade chip heading into the deadline. I'm going with James Paxton. James Paxton has been absolutely on fire since he came back from the injury, early in spring training. He's been one of, if not your best starter, 2-1, ERA just over 3. He's striking out guys left and right. He's not walking anybody. He looks really sharp. And let's face it, if we're talking about the Red Sox selling at the deadline, you need to sell guys that aren't part of your long-term future. James Paxton's in his mid-30s, and you barely got him on the mound for the second year of his deal. So he's not part of your future. He's a great rental for any team that needs that extra starting pitching to get them over the hump or to supplement what they already have. Again, Texas Rangers could be looking for another starter just to add to that mix. Philadelphia Phillies, always looking for starting pitching. There are teams out there that would absolutely want to trade for him. Would the return be, would it blow you away? Probably not. Again, he's a 34-year-old, injury-prone pitcher on a, low-money deal. He's absolutely a rental, and everyone knows that the Red Sox aren't going to extend him, that he's not part of the future. So you're not going to get a top prospect in return, but you can still get, I think, someone in the, between the 10 and 20 range for prospects. Maybe someone's number 14, number 15, and maybe they grow and develop within your system. You could absolutely do something like that. So for me, it's Paxton. I just think the way he's been performing since he came back, he's made himself a very valuable asset, and you're not going to extend him. You might as well just get as much for him as you can, like you failed to do last year with Nathan Eovaldi and JD Martinez. Don't make that same mistake this year. Get this guy traded somewhere and get a good return for him. Micah, what do you think of Paxton?
Yeah, I think that's a really solid solid option. Even if, I know you said you're not going to extend him, but even if the Red Sox had interest of bringing him back, if he ends up finishing the year healthy, you can sign him again. Like, he's going to be a free agent. So if you really like him and he trusts the medical team in Boston, because they really helped him get back to where he was, maybe there's a possibility of them getting together again and getting a deal done. But if with him being a rental, and if the Red Sox are out of it, he absolutely should be dealt. And there's been names like Corbin Burns, Shane Bieber has even been a name that's been out there. But those guys would really bring back a lot of prospect capital. They would be expensive. Whereas Paxton, I mean, he's really cheap in terms of the finances. And I don't think it's going to, like you said, I don't think it's going to take that much to get him. But you never know what deal teams are going to make, because last year Christian Vasquez, you know, brought back two prospects that I think the Red Sox are very happy with that return. And Vasquez was a rental catcher. So if Paxton keeps pitching well, that will only increase the price tag in terms of the prospects that teams will have to give up to get him. So hopefully that continues and he keeps making himself a very attractive trade chip, because starting pitching, in my opinion, I think Paxton probably has more value than Jansen, because you're going to get more innings out of him. From August to the end of the season, you're probably going to get 7-8 starts. So a team that really needs starting pitching, they may be really desperate and they may be willing to give up a prospect 8, 9, or 10 in their system, and maybe one other. Who knows? You never know how desperate a team really is. But I do think Paxton is a really good trade chip. And even if the Red Sox turn this around a little bit, and they're kind of like last year where they were a game and a half out of the wild card come deadline, that might be someone that Heim Bloom says, you know what, we're kind of in it, but do we really think we have a team that can really win? And with him being a rental, you get what you can, and you build for 2024. I don't know. I think he's going to make a decision one way or another. And to me, with Paxton being a rental, I do think he is. I think we will see him be traded for sure.
Terry,
I think of our top three that we've just gone through, I think Paxton automatically will be gone, and I don't think the return will be quite as big necessarily, because it is a bigger market. You know, teams will be willing to deal a lot of these guys, but I think absolutely he will be traded, and whichever team that trades for him probably won't do business with us ever again, because the third week of August, he's going to be, you know, out for a while and, probably hurt a team's chances in the playoff run, especially if it's like a fringe wild card team that ends up acquiring him. But absolutely, and you know, Red Sox fans should root for him to be successful, because the more successful he is, the better the return will be. The only other, well, there actually could be two pitchers that could be moved. The only one of value, though, Chris Martin, similarly to Jansen, a couple years of control. And I think it's, you know, it would be a fair debate that maybe Martin is your best reliever right now. I mean, I probably, at the moment, trust him a little bit more than Kenley. Now, if Kenley were to get hot here for the next couple of weeks, then I could be swayed back over to his side of the spectrum. But I think Martin will have a great deal of value. And then I think Nick Pivetta will generate some interest. Much like I said, I think it was on last night's show, some team will think they can fix him. and they'll drink the punch and take him on.
Yeah, 100%. I could totally see that as well. So, Pivetta still has value as a starter, I think. You know, we put him in the bullpen, but you're right. There'll be some team out there that will want to put him back in their rotation and try and, you know, get the most out of him. So I think that is a very realistic option as well. Michael, what did you want to add?
If the Red Sox decide to trade Jansen and Martin, I think that would make Heim Bloom, if he still has his job in the offseason, that would make his job much harder come the offseason, because he would have to replace two fairly reliable arms out there. And I'm just not sure you can do that consistently every offseason, because I think Heim Bloom is not usually a person that many people praise for his signings, but you have to give him props for going out there and getting Martin, because he's been fantastic. And Jansen's been pretty solid, minus that it's been pretty much that St. Louis series. If you take those two outings out of there, his numbers are pretty good. So I think Red Sox fans really do have to give him credit for reshaping and rebuilding that bullpen, because it's been the strength of this team, the most consistent part of this team all season long. But if you get rid of those two guys, then I think you're back to a lot of question marks in the offseason of who do we trust with a lead late, and can we find a closer? Do we have to now go trade for a closer? I think it does complicate things. If the Red Sox are selling as we're kind of expecting them to me, 2024, if Bloom's here, that's got to be the year where they compete, and you cannot go into 2024 with a subpar bullpen. That can't happen. It's got to be as good as it is this year, or even better, because next year they would absolutely have to win, because I can't imagine another losing season after this year. And it's not going to happen with Bloom keeping his job. So I think you got to be careful if you keep shipping these bullpen arms out. How do you replace them in the offseason?
Bloom's status is really fascinating right now. And you look back to 2015, Ben Sherrington was fired just after the August trade deadline. And so he handled, you know, whatever moves that took place. I'm trying to think of what might have even happened that year. We weren't buyers, I knew that. But either way, he was fired first week of August. And maybe Dombrowski's firing in Detroit kind of was the catalyst for that. Maybe that's why it happened to begin with. But Dombrowski also kept his job in Boston through the 2019 trade deadline. So, you know, you look at it like, well, that's what the precedent is. So Heim's going to handle business at the trade deadline, regardless of what his status is. But the way I look at it is, how many trades has Bloom really nailed? You know what I mean? He hasn't won a ton of them or gotten great value back. You know, I was starting to really like the Valdez acquisition, but he had lots of regression in the last 3 or 4 weeks. So maybe he turns it around, but he's a huge defensive liability too. So I'm not sure how I like that trade. I know that Abreu kid is in either Portland or Worcester. He was the other part of the trade. So I guess the jury isn't completely out yet, but Bloom doesn't really get a ton of value. So do you really, if your intention is to potentially get rid of him, do you get rid of him and then hand the reins to Brian O'Halloran for at least the rest of the season? It's extremely fascinating, you know, and if we have a couple more bad series here, I think the calls will for his firing will intensify, whether it happens or not.
Yeah, and that'll certainly make for an awkward situation, because, let's face it, he's probably going to be the one handling the deadline, and his job's sort of teetering. So as a Red Sox fan, how confident do you feel about that's the guy that's going to be handling your trade deadline and could potentially be moving a lot of pieces? It's like you said, slam dunk trades, he's maybe had one or two, you know, like if that, but he's had a lot of swings and misses too. That Jackie Bradley trade will forever haunt him. So we'll see. It's going to be an interesting deadline one way or the other, regardless of who's running it. So before we wrap real quick, we're just going to pivot to the West Coast. Obviously, I think the biggest story going around baseball right now is what's happening with the Oakland Athletics. The state of Nevada just approved funding for their new stadium, which was pretty much the biggest hurdle they had to clear to move the team to Las Vegas. The Oakland Athletics fans have responded by showing up in droves to the Coliseum to protest the move of the team. I think they had like 28,000-30,000 fans at the last couple of games, more than they've had in a very, very long time. So the fans are not happy. I think a lot of people around baseball are not happy because, you know, it's really just the selfishness of the owner and the greed, frankly, of the owner that's causing this. The Oakland Athletics do have good fans. They've just, you know, they were in a bad stadium, which I don't think the city of Oakland really did them any favors either, because they wouldn't let them out of that lease to explore other options nearby. Fans didn't like going to the stadium, and that sort of dwindled attendance, and that sort of, you know, allowed the owner to do what he's doing now and force a move to Las Vegas. So it's just kind of a shame. I hope that they really don't become the Las Vegas Athletics, but all signs point to that being the case. Terry, what are your thoughts on everything going on in Oakland?
It's really a shame because Oakland does have a kind of a, I don't know if I want to call it a rich history, but you know, they had some success in the 70s and won a few titles, and and then they won one in the late 80s, didn't they? I think they beat the Dodgers one of those years, and then lost the rematch.
1990.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, you hate to see a town like Oakland, you know, lose a team. I know San Francisco is just across the bridge there, but the thing I hate the most is Las Vegas is a transplant town. Nobody is from Vegas. They're all from other places, and their favorite team is from wherever that place they're from. If I moved to Vegas, that sounds like amazing, by the way, for a guy who loves to play Texas Hold'em and all that. I would always love the Red Sox still. That's a weird saying because I've bashed them so much over the last several months. You know, I'm the anti-Bloom guy, but the Red Sox would still be my team. You know, when I'm watching sports, that's, and I could imagine it's the same for everybody out there. And how endearing are the Tampa Bay Rays to the people of Tampa? That's another transplant town. Miami has never been able to sell out a baseball stadium unless it's a playoff or a World Series. You know, another transplant town. I live in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Nobody in Myrtle is from Myrtle. It's the way it is. I live in a transplant town myself. So I hate that. There's so many other towns out there. Like Montreal is the slam dunk. You know, they had the Expos all those years and they've been clamoring for a team. Salt Lake City is a fascinating one, and I know there's been a lot of interest there from that community. I think that would be a great fan base that would rally around their team. Oklahoma City could potentially be another one. You know, the Thunder, you know, and the NBA have really, you know, made themselves home there. There's so many. I mean, there's other fringe ones. I mean, you could look at New Orleans, Nashville could be another one. Charlotte, Indianapolis could potentially be a, you know, a destination for a team. I'd much rather see MLB go that route. I don't get the appeal of Las Vegas. I really don't.
Yeah, I'm with you. And to your point about Tampa, having lived there for 5 years, yeah, they don't care about the Rays. They don't. Tampa is, if anything, it's college football. They watch college football and that's it. They don't care about the Rays. They don't care about any other team in that town. It's all transplants from Philly, New York, and Boston. Anyone who tells you that they're a true legit Rays fan is probably lying to you. So, yeah, I agree with you on them.
And real quick, one last thing I meant to mention, if it's the same ownership, they're going to be a small market team in Vegas that don't spend money. So that makes it even more dumber to me.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't make much sense. Micah, what are your thoughts on the Oakland situation?
Well, the fact that they only need the other owners to agree on this basically means it's a done deal, because I don't think they would have gone this far if they didn't believe the other owners would have agreed. So it's really a shame, because this team was competing in the AL West and they were making wild cards in the playoffs consistently. And you just look at some of the players that they had that they either traded or just let go. And it's like this roster was really talented. I mean, Matt Chapman, Olson, the first baseman, Sean Murphy. There was even a report that I read that Marcus Semien, the year that he went to Toronto on that one-year deal and he finished third in the MVP voting, he wanted to sign a one-year deal and they just said, no, go test the free agent market. And it's like, you know, you could have had a guy who was an MVP candidate before and then turned into one that year. And they have no interest in winning there. And it's such a shame, because the fans deserve so much better. In terms of Vegas, I would much rather see, I heard this the other day, Eno Saris said this, and I loved it. He said that the owner of the Athletics should move to Vegas, but start a new team. And then that way you leave Oakland's history in Oakland and you start a new team in Las Vegas, and they act like they're the Oakland Athletics. They probably still would be in the AL West. But then Oakland would be a potential expansion team in the future. You could bring them back, essentially. That way you're not messing with the history and the fans. If they want to jump back on the Oakland Athletics train 5 years from now, because expansion is definitely coming. It's financially, it just makes way too much sense for the owners to not expand. So it's coming. And if you look at TV markets, which is huge for teams in terms of finances, Oakland is better than any of the cities that are talked about for expansion. So I would hate to see the Las Vegas Athletics, you know, call the Las Vegas whatever, similar to like the hockey team that just won. You know, they are Las Vegas's team. Everyone just was like, yeah, I'm going to follow this team. And, you know, now they will just want a title, create an entirely new team in Las Vegas. And then when expansion comes, bring back the A's, and let those fans have their team again, because what they've done is a crime. I wish there was some type of relegation system similar to the European soccer leagues, because they don't belong in Major League Baseball. That team is a joke. And it's not, has nothing to do with the players. It has everything to do with the owners. They have not tried. It just infuriates me that they're going to be able to get the number one overall pick because they've sucked. They don't deserve that. The system should not be set up to allow teams like Oakland or whatever they're going to be in Las Vegas. It should not be set up to allow teams to just completely tank and win 52 games and then all of a sudden try to build your farm system back up. It's a shame. And to me, the tanking in baseball is a major issue, because these rebuilds take years because of the prospects. And it's just a terrible product. And the teams that are really competitive in the AL West, they get essentially 10, 11, 12 wins every year because that team is terrible. So if you're playing the Oakland Athletics, you have put 10 wins at least on your record, because you should never lose to this team. They are that bad. I know they just went on a win streak, but they are a terrible team. And what they've done, it's disgusting.
Well, careful not to jinx that, because I'm sure the Athletics will be on the Red Sox schedule at some point, and I'm sure we'll lose 2 out of 3 to them somehow, some way. But yeah, I agree. This is awful for that city, for that fan base. There is one known player from Las Vegas who's already spoken out against it, Bryce Harper, to his credit, said, I hope they don't take the Athletics name. It's not fair to that fan base. It's not fair to what that city's gone through. He's right. It really isn't. My only issue with the scenario you proposed, Micah, is that I worry that that would just be the Montreal Expos all over again, where you say, oh, yeah, well, you can always bring him back in the future. I'm sure some people thought Montreal would be back at some point, and it never has. And that stadium is just sitting there rotting. And, you know, it's the idea of the Expos ever becoming a thing again is just getting further and further away. So my only worry would be that the Athletics would sort of enter into that baseball purgatory along with the Expos. So I wouldn't want to see that happen, but I do agree expansion is inevitable. Expansion is inevitable in all sports at this point. But yeah, baseball as well. And Terry, you brought up a couple of really good markets like Nashville. I think Nashville would be a great place to put a baseball team, especially with Vanderbilt right there. Vanderbilt's a big baseball school. On the pre-show, I mentioned Portland. You know, Portland's another city that's got a big TV market. Obviously, you know, the Oregon Ducks are a pretty good baseball team too. So you have that connection there as well. They've already got one pro sports team in Portland. So I think there's a lot of options. And I hope that in a way that like it's the Las Vegas thing, just in a way, I hope it doesn't work. And because you're right, Terry, it's like if it's the same owner, so he's going to go to Vegas and not spend money on players, and you'll just be the worst team of the new Vegas wave. Because let's face it, if LeBron has his way, which he will, Vegas is going to get a basketball team at some point. He and John Henry are actually a big part of trying to make that happen. They've already got the football team. They've already got the hockey team, and the hockey team just won. So what's this owner going to do? Go to Vegas and just be the worst team and be irrelevant in a different location? It just really makes no sense for the sport as a whole. I hope that somehow the brand of the Oakland Athletics survives and can be, you know, even if it is resurrected in a couple of years, you know, like that's fine. But just, I don't know, the whole thing's just such a shame. And it's just so gross that it's like the selfishness and greediness of one owner is torpedoing, you know, one of the more historic franchises in baseball.
Also, another thing that came to mind, two other markets that are somewhat fascinating, maybe not quite as likely, but Mexico City, if you want to, you know, get the international appeal, I think if they built, you know, a 40,000 seat arena, they could probably sell it out. Another one, maybe put one in San Juan, Puerto Rico, that could, you know, similarly appeal to the Caribbean. Cause I mean, you've got, you know, the Dominican right there. That's a very baseball rich, you know, country. And I don't know what, you know, TV access is like in Cuba necessarily, but that's a market that loves baseball anyway. And, so I think those could be particularly, appealing as well.
Micah, what did you have to add?
Jason, you said how, like, you move to a new city and you don't want to be just another terrible team just in a different location. I personally think that the owner of the Athletics, whether it happens after they move or even before they officially move, I think he's going to sell the team. I think he's going to make so much money from moving, and then he's going to say, all right, I've made my money, because we know the Oakland Athletics have never cared about winning, really, because they've had one of the lowest payrolls in baseball for like decades now. So he's going to pocket whatever money he can get. And then I think he could sell. And then hopefully the baseball world gets another owner who cares about winning. You know, Steve Cohen, as much as I think he's breaking baseball, I love to see a guy who wants to win and is investing in a team. And hopefully baseball gets an owner who actually cares about winning and will spend money rather than just spend the bare minimum and just put out a mediocre team, or in this case now, a terrible team.
Yeah, I mean, that's very likely that that's exactly what's going to happen. And you're right. At the very least, you know, if he does sell it to another Steve Cohen type, or just, you know, one of these guys that has a lot of money and just, you know, wants to build a successful team, that part of it's good for baseball. I just don't think killing the brand of one of the more historic franchises that's had so many great players come through there, that part is not good for baseball, and that's going to be hard for the sport to recover from a little bit. So we'll see how it goes, but either way, enjoy the Oakland Athletics as much as you can while they're still here, because it's not going to last much longer, unfortunately. So with that, we will wrap up this Bastards Roundtable episode. The Red Sox will be taking on the Yankees this weekend, and the Weekend Crew will have you guys Monday morning to recap that series. So we'll see you guys then. Until then, everyone, take care.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.